Stop waiting for permission to start your business. Your idea is one step away, and Shopify can make it easy to make it happen. That's what we did at Crypto 101 and use Shopify to sell our book, and the rest is history. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify Checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101. August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use, prepare for your autumn wardrobe, and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia and cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now, how I tell you, you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101.
All right, everybody, we're at the Audi Summit here, sponsored by The Tie. I'm joined by an esteemed guest, really excited to have GP, general partner of Multicoin Capital, Spencer Applebaum.
Great to meet you.
How's it going? Great to meet you. Life's good, treating you well?
Yeah, it's beautiful out here. I came last year to the Audi Summit. The Tie puts on a great event. It's a really good crowd. I was on a panel earlier today talking about how we get trillion-dollar finance to actually come onto public blockchain rails, Oh, wow. which is obviously top of mind. But yeah, they do. They've got the food trucks out here. It's just a great event.
Yeah,
love being out here.
It's been a ton of fun. I feel like the quality of guests that we've had this year, particularly relative to any other year, it's just been up and to the right.
Yeah. And I think when you have a bear market like we've seen in crypto, generally that self-selects for people who really believe in the industry and want to be here. So I think you had a lot of the tourists come in 2021 and 2022 when the market was up. But like, you have to have a real thesis on the space and the technology behind it if you're going to come to something like this. In July, by the way.
Like Crypto 101 podcast. Yeah, you know, look exactly. At all these other booths. They're empty. We're here working.
Exactly.
And we've got the conviction. We're passionate.
Yeah.
I think we share that same passion. And so Multicoin Capital, tell us a little bit about what your guys' thesis is and how you chop up the crypto market. I know it's multi-strategy.
Yeah.
And,
So for some context, Multicoin Capital is a thesis-driven investment firm exclusively focused on crypto. We launched our first fund, which is a liquid hedge fund that trades in the token markets. We launched that in October of 2017. I don't know how long you've been in crypto, but you might remember we went kind of from public ICOs, which more or less broke every securities law imaginable, to a real crypto venture market. And so we raised our first venture fund in July of 2018. That was a $17 million fund. We've since raised a series of venture funds, of which we're now investing out of Venture Fund 3, which is a $422 million fund. And we invest in both tokens and equity, but everything we do is in the crypto space. So you might have noticed a lot of our peer set is starting to dabble in AI and robotics and other really buzzy industries.
Yep.
I think everyone has their own reason for doing that. Maybe they believe they have an edge. But we still believe there's a lot of opportunity in crypto and public blockchains. And so we're staying true to our roots and where we believe we have an edge. Hopefully the bees don't get us. But yeah, that's the high level about us.
Awesome. And tell us a little bit about, you know, what part of the market you guys are most focused on. I've seen you guys have a prolific group of folks that are investing there that are also writing quite a bit.
Yeah.
So you guys have these theses that come out, and I'm sure the LPs get a first look, but then they go out to the blog. And I love reading these because I get to learn a lot. And I know DPIN, decentralized physical infrastructure, something you guys have written about.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit of the lay of the land, maybe even what the portfolio looks like, you know, 20% DPIN or whatever.
For sure. Yeah, writing's been a very deep part of all our culture basically since the inception of the firm.
Yeah.
You know, I always joke about this. I think we've had about 15 or 16 people on the multi-coin investment team in our history, and only three people had worked in crypto before that, and one person had invested before that. And so we're kind of a ragtag group of people.
I love it.
And in the early days of Multicoin, we wrote a lot because there wasn't really any real institutional research in the crypto space. And it's probably, if I had to point to one thing of, you know, when I joined, I think the firm had something like $20 million of AUM today. Wow. We're a $2 billion institutional asset manager. If I would say there's one thing that contributed to that success, it's our writing in public. And it's done a few things for us. One is it's helped us attract founders who are building in specific areas that we're really excited about. So just to use an example, we wrote a blog post, I want to say 5 years ago, on the opportunity for interest rate derivatives in DeFi. If you think about the DeFi market, all the borrowing and lending that happens is variable rate. So if I'm lending on Aave at 5%, maybe tomorrow it's 7%, or maybe tomorrow it's 3%. There's a huge opportunity to build derivatives so that people can hedge in their exposure. And we wrote about that literally 5 years ago. Nothing really came of it until, I want to say, 18 months ago, someone reached out to us and said they had read that blog post and they were building
an changed their life.
Yeah. And they were building an interest rate derivatives product. And we ended up funding that investment literally 5 years later.
Wow.
So we write a lot of thematic research. We've written about DPIN, decentralized derivatives, the opportunity for specialized stablecoin fintechs, kind of the entire crypto stack and where we see the opportunity. And all of the best deals I think we've made in the history of the firm have come from people reading those articles, reaching out to us saying, hey, we either agree with you, or even in a lot of cases, hey, we disagree with you, but we want to do some intellectual sparring. Yeah, we want to prove you wrong over a phone call. Okay, great. You prove us wrong over a phone call and we give you money. So it's been a huge part of our success historically.
Awesome. And kind of what does the portfolio look like in terms of, you know, is it, the venture funds are typically 10-year time horizon, illiquid. You know, investors get their money back as the projects sort of graduate.
Yeah.
But as far as I understand, there's also some liquid strategies that you guys use.
Yeah, exactly. So we have two major lines of business.
Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply. I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak. 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always the headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves and suddenly everybody's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform trusted by 94% of the Fortune 500. It captures workflows as they happen and turns them into step-by-step documentation your team can review and share. You just do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot automatically. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. Scribe doesn't just document workflows, it uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps and opportunities to simplify or automate. To see what Scribe could look like for your org, head to scribe.how/crypto101 and mention Crypto101 for your first month of Scribe Capture free on select plans. That's Scribe, scribe.how/crypto101.
We have a liquid hedge fund, so it's all fundamental focus. We're not doing algorithmic trading or market making or arbitrage or anything like that. We're basically trying to find assets in the public markets that give us a lot of the skew that you see in venture and that we think will compound over long periods of time. So I would say our average hold time in the hedge fund is anywhere from, you know, several months to, in most cases, years. And assets in that fund are primarily liquid crypto tokens. So, you know, we own things like Hyperliquid and Solana and Zcash and Camino and Jito and those. And then a small portion of the fund, we've started to, you could call it expand the mandate. We think it's very much in mandate, but we've also started to own some equities that are crypto related.
Right.
So we have a Robinhood position, for example. We've owned Coinbase historically. There's lots of, you know, I would say, one of the more interesting trends that we've noticed in the last 12 months is the IPO window for crypto companies has really opened up.
Exactly.
There's been 6 or 7 companies in the last 2 years that have gone public in crypto, and there's a lot of other groups with filings out right now. And so as those companies come to the public markets, I think we'll be able to invest in them out of the hedge fund. So that's one part of our business. And then we have the venture fund where you can think of it, we're basically investing in tokens that don't exist yet. So about 2/3 of our current venture fund is made up of projects where we believe the value will accrue to the token. And then a third equity in kind of picks and shovels companies that operate in and around crypto, a lot of which are actually here this week. So that's kind of how to think about what we do.
Where do you fall in the debate between tokens and equity when a company, I think the most recent big scuttle was around Venice,
yes,
right? They did a big equity raise, and the token holders still feel like they're, you know, not getting completely shafted. But on the other end of the spectrum, you had projects like Axelar, which got acquired by Coinbase, and the token pretty much, you know, went defunct because it was just the equity that was acquired. So 100%. Where do you stand on this, and how do you make sense of it?
Yeah, I actually have really strong opinions. I'd love to hear it. And because we've learned a lot of these lessons the hard way,
you've been burned.
Yeah, for sure. It is a really bad idea in really any industry, but certainly in crypto, where you have a token and equity, to have diverging cap tables. And so if you have a VC base, let's just say, that only owns the equity but doesn't own tokens, and then you launch a token, I think that's really net negative, because at the end of the day, the vast majority of tokens, where we're at in the cycle, is they need to accrue revenue. And so let's say you're a company doing, I'm just making it up, 100 million of revenue. Some portion of that has to go to the equity, and some portion of that has to go to the token if you have diverging cap tables. And how do you actually decide what goes to what?
Right.
So I think it's...
And really, who gets to say?
Exactly. And so I think it's really important that the cap tables look the same for both the token and the equity. I will say another trend I've noticed recently is a lot of crypto venture firms have kind of gone sour on tokens. And I think a lot of that is because of the market that we've seen over the last, call it, year.
That happens in every bear market, though.
Right. Know. And I think we're literally doing this on the day that Clarity Tax dropped publicly, like 10 minutes ago. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But assuming that Clarity does pass, I think there's a real path towards tokens being able to accrue more value and, you know, onshore issuers being able to drive cash flows to token holders.
Yeah.
And so we're actually leaning in more on tokens than we ever have, even though it feels like the venture industry and crypto as a whole has started to skew more towards equity.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I was speaking with the former chairman of the CFTC this morning, Chris Giancarlo, Crypto Dad.
Great, great guy.
Incredible person. That was, you know, one of my favorite conversations we've had.
Yeah.
And he was basically saying, here's the skinny. It doesn't matter if it passes or doesn't pass in the near term, because Mike Selig, Paul Atkins at the CFTC, like, these guys have stuff loaded in the hopper. Project Crypto, this stuff is going to run with or without. And what's your take on that?
It's a really good point. And one thing, let's assume it doesn't pass. One thing that the industry really needs to do is spend the next 2 years, while we have this friendly administration, getting the SEC and the CFTC to put out rulemaking that is obviously beneficial to the industry, and then have all of the constituents, right, exchanges, custodians, market makers, traditional financial institutions, whoever, adopt them and get them so embedded into their workflows that, you know, let's assume that the Republicans lose control in 2028. By that time, it's so integrated into how the financial system works that you almost can't undo it.
Yeah.
And so, look, we're optimistic that Clarity is going to pass. Who knows?
And it does seem like the big banks, right?
Yeah.
They're still betting on. I mean, Morgan Stanley just released a staking ETF for Ethereum, staking ETF for Solana. They know this stuff's not going away. They're rolling stuff out for their wealth management clients. They're rolling stuff out for their institutional trading counterparties.
Yes.
I mean, you hear it here. Fidelity was there, Invesco. I mean, these
Apollo
guys
owns Morpho tokens.
We were just talking about that. Yeah, it's so crazy. And so it seems like it's becoming less, crypto is becoming less political, which is good, because it's now, you know, of course, you know, the big banks are here, the retail's here. And we have potentially a new scapegoat for the progressives to kind of naysay and poo-poo, which is AI.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like AI has taken a lot of the wind out of the sails of crypto, because, you know, all my friends who are like typically, you know, buying crypto stuff, they're like, dude, we've been trading Micron and semis and like triple levered this and that. And
yeah.
So we don't need to go chase, you know, our Coinbase account. We're just doing it in our brokerage account. But now you can see the anti-crypto army, those same cast of characters, Liz Warren, Chuck Schumer, starting to focus their gaze now on AI.
Yeah.
And that could be a net positive for crypto, as that kind of outperformance starts to converge a little bit.
I think so.
And the policy stuff to be, you know, kind of more favorable in crypto.
Yeah, and it just shows you it was never really about crypto, the technology. It was about crypto and how much retail was speculating on it. But we've seen there's a hot ball of money. Earlier this year, it was in gold and silver, and then it was in oil.
Right.
It's been in crypto before. I'm sure it's going to be in crypto again. Right now, it's in AI. And it's as a politician, you want to go where the attention is. And so right now, the attention is AI. And that's why you're seeing a lot of the progressives go after it, which, again, is kind of great for us.
get the eyes off us.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, kind of bring up things back to basics. Yeah. Fundamentals of sort of investing versus trading. And, you know, you do it both, right? And how do you kind of differentiate in your mind, this is a position that I want to, you know, put on overnight or for this week, versus this is something that I think I want to hold on to for, what's your time horizon for a long-term investment in crypto?
I think it's really important as an investor, whether you're a liquid manager or a venture manager, to know where you have edge. And I think, you know, we've been running a public crypto fund for, I guess, 9 years at this point, and we've learned where we have edge, which is in asset selection and investing over a long time horizon. And so we don't really trade. I think the times in the past, in the early days when we did try to trade, we almost universally lost money. And so we just try to find assets. And we're talking about the public markets right now. Yeah. So assets on the public side that we believe are fundamentally misunderstood by the market and therefore mispriced, that we can own for a long period of time, whose fundamentals are going to continue to compound over long stretches of time. And so it's very rare, I would say, that, you know, we wake up one day and we decide, oh, I don't know, AI, we're talking about it already. Oh, AI is really hot. Like, let's go buy an AI token because, like, we think that the memes are going to drive it higher or something like that. That's just, there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's just Multicoin as a firm does not have any edge in doing that.
Yeah.
And so everything we do is very long-term oriented.
Okay, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
What does the kind of portfolio breakdown look like in terms of asset allocation across crypto?
Yeah.
And sector-wise?
Yeah, we're a very concentrated fund. So what we usually say is, and this is true, I think our top eight positions make up about 90% of the portfolio.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And so we don't do a top-down view of, you know, we want to have 10% allocated to DPIN and 30% allocated to DeFi and 20% allocated to L1s. It's very much a bottoms-up approach of, do we like this asset? If so, what's the liquidity profile relative to our fund size? How do we weigh it compared to other things that we like? But, you know, some of the, and we're public about this, some of our largest positions are Hyperliquid, which we just published a 44-page research report on last week. Solana, which we were the first money in Solana in April of 2018. Robinhood Equities, another large position, and so is Zcash. So those are some of the core positions that we've been public about and are very excited about.
How does the firm decide when to hit the sell button? Because I feel like with crypto investors, you know, you think about these things over the course of the next 10 years, you know, I mean, is it maybe a thesis invalidation, something happens, okay, we're going to sell?
Yeah.
Or is it like, hey, it hit our price target? How do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think there's really three reasons why we would sell something. One, the most obvious is thesis invalidation. That's really the nice part about investing in liquid crypto is, as I was saying earlier, you get a lot of venture skew, right? Like, you can make 10x on a token in the public market.
Right.
But if you realize you're wrong 3 months after you buy it, you can sell it, right?
Yeah,
you're not
going to
take a zero on it, right?
Right.
So thesis invalidation for sure. Number two is, look, we have a pot of money, and, you know, if we get really excited about something else, more so than one of the assets that we own, we might trim, you know, the asset that we currently own to be able to put on a new position. So you always have to think about relative to your opportunity costs and what else you can own. Yep. And then the third thing, which really applies the most to assets that have demonstrable cash flows, is the valuation question. And so we actually, I think we were pretty conservative in saying this, but we put in our hype report, we did a valuation analysis. I recommend everyone go read it. But, you know, it's hard. I don't really like the term price target because there's so much path dependency between where you are today and where the project might be when you hit the price target.
Sure.
Like, what if, let's say, I don't know, their market share increases by 50% in between now and then? Well, shouldn't your price target probably be adjusted upward from where it is today?
Yeah, it can't be a static price target.
It can't be a static price target. But I will say there are assets that trade in the crypto markets today that you can value on cash flows and fundamentals. And if we believe that the market is appropriately pricing them or even overpricing them, we're happy to take liquidity where we can.
Yeah. I want to cycle back to something you mentioned earlier, which I thought was a really key moment in altcoins, which was Apollo's investment in Morpho. And from your standpoint, when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is super cool. We have almost $1 trillion private equity firm.
Yeah.
They're buying crypto tokens. That gives a passive bid. Why do you think they did it?
I think they want to demonstrate to the rest of the market that they're not just, you know, we see some people launch tokenized T-bill funds and like not really do that much with them. I think taking an active position in a publicly traded token that probably the rest of Wall Street has never heard of signals that they're really serious about the industry and that they believe it's here to stay.
Yeah.
I think that's one trend that we've really noticed lately is, and you mentioned, I think, Morgan Stanley earlier.
Yeah.
We're seeing all these groups. They're not launching these products because they think it's like optically good. They're doing it because they believe in the industry long term and want to signal to everyone else that they're here to stay and that they believe they can make money while doing it. So I think Apollo really did it to show the rest of the traditional financial market that crypto is a real market and they believe that there's a huge opportunity here.
Do you think there's any level of them actually, beyond being an investor in the protocol, leveraging that protocol and the lend facility for their portfolio companies?
Absolutely.
What would that look like?
Yeah, it's hard to say specifically, but we're talking about Morpho, so I'll bring it up. Coinbase, you know, people at Multicoin, you know, we own crypto. We've been yelling at them for a long time. Hey, can we get a line of credit against our Bitcoin or our Sol or our ETH or whatever? Right. And they haven't been able to do it. And it's really annoying because then we go to traditional banks and they basically say, oh, well, that's not even a real asset. But if you sell it tomorrow, then we'll give you a line of credit, right? And so what Coinbase is doing now, though, is they're routing all of that flow to Morpho. And so if you own Bitcoin on Coinbase, they'll actually allow you to basically deposit in Morpho, borrow against it. And the reason that they're doing that is DeFi is always going to have a lower cost of capital because it's a global liquidity pool where any retail lender around the world can put money into it rather than, they would probably need to go to, say, a specialty finance firm. They could borrow at, I don't know, 7% or whatever. Or you can just use DeFi where a retail user that owns USDC in Brazil is happy to just earn, let's say, 5% on their money. And so Coinbase is the first company that we've seen routing to Morpho. Robinhood just announced it as well.
I think this
is going to be a trend that we see a lot going forward.
Yeah, full disclosure, I've got exposure to Morpho. I think...
So do we.
Yeah, there you go. I think it's an incredible sort of technology. And what do you make of, a company that's, you know, kind of like Securitize or some of these products that are out there that are... They don't have a token.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's in mandate, but they're enabling the rails for tokenization.
Yeah. So that's very much in mandate. And we're not an investor in Securitize itself, but a lot of companies that look like Securitize that I call them, they're basically building the picks and shovels financial rails for crypto. I think, especially if you're building in a B2B context like a Securitize is, I don't know if there's really that much reason to launch a token. And so, you know, I know a lot of other folks will say, oh, you know, no matter what you're doing, you should launch a token because the venture investor will get liquidity faster. We say, look, if you don't have a reason to launch a token, don't do it because it's an entirely... It's like launching a new product line and you have a whole new community you have to worry about. And it can just become a headache.
Yeah.
And so... the Securitizes of the world are very much in mandate for sure on the venture side. And again, now that the IPO window has kind of opened up, Securitize being an obvious example, they're now public. We can also own those in the hedge fund, which is great.
What do you think of, these DATCOs, right? Digital asset treasury companies where they're, you know, MicroStrategy was the original one. And, what do you make of these? Are these net good? Are they net bad? And also, what do you make of MicroStrategy selling $250 million worth of Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think if they can be good or they can be bad depending
cuts
on how they're...
Yeah,
cuts both ways. And it depends on how responsibly they're managed.
Sure.
I think, you know, if they're Hyperliquid, for example, there's a company called Hyperliquid Strategies.
Per. I've got exposure.
Right. they manage it terrifically. And really what they're offering is a way for institutional U.S. investors to be able to access hype, because otherwise, if you're some, say, global macro hedge fund or long short TMT fund, how are you really going to buy hype? Like the regulatory frameworks for you to be able to hold it, stake it, custody, all those things, it's still very gray. And so they just give those investors an opportunity to get exposure to hype the asset. And I think it's great. I think there are other examples of companies who are not ran great. MicroStrategy is probably fits somewhere in the middle. I think where we're at right now with MicroStrategy is he's been the main character for too long. And I think he's had too much influence over the price of Bitcoin. I think, you know, STRC has recovered a bit. He kind of, I think he needs to take a break for a couple months, and we'll see where it goes. But yeah, my opinion is he's just had too much of an influence over the price of Bitcoin, and he needs to not be the main character anymore.
Yeah. So kind of last question, but yeah, outside of Clarity Act,
yeah,
what's going to kick this bear market to the dirt? What's going to kick the bull market into high gear? Is it just time, right? Through a time correction? Is it momentum and speculation starting to return? Is it new valuation capture models, like in your, or something completely different? But what do you kind of think about in regards to that?
Yeah, I think there's two things. So one thing that I think people really forget a lot about, because it already passed, is the Genius Bill.
Sure.
And, or Genius Act, I should say. And what people don't realize is, even though Genius was passed a long time ago, it actually hasn't gone into production yet, meaning that like companies can't actually leverage Genius to launch stablecoins until January of 2027. Wow. I think we're about a month past the comment notice period for it. And so everyone's looking at stablecoins and saying, oh, why is there still only, whatever, $300 billion
it's stuck there, right, man.
Why is there still only $300 billion of stablecoins outstanding? Genius was passed, I don't know, 4 months ago or whatever. It's like, well, it hasn't actually been implemented yet. And so once that turns on in January, I think that's a really good catalyst.
Got it.
And then I think the other catalyst is public chains. Forget like the public chains like Solana, Ethereum, I think a lot of them right now are focused on building features that will actually allow institutions to bring assets on chain. So things like privacy and KYC at the wallet layer and permission transfers. And so I think once a lot of those features are live, institutions will feel a lot more comfortable issuing and trading assets on chain. And I think that's probably what is going to drive the next bull market, is exogenous assets coming on chain and being traded.
Love it. I can't wait. And then people levering that up.
For sure.
People, you know, looping it. Yes. And getting the DeFi money Legos back up to being
built. Exactly.
Exciting. Well, yeah. Look, guys, everybody at home watching, I hope you enjoyed. That was my conversation with Multicoin Capital, Spencer Applebaum, GP.
Thank you so much. Me.
You bet. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Appreciate it.
I'm sure we'll see you around.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.